You get that baby in out of the cold. That is too cold for that baby. You don't be walking around at 24 below with a baby in a backpack.
From Wyoming Public Media, this is The Modern West. I'm Micah Schweitzer. On this episode, we'll hear verses from kayakers, cabin dwellers, and ghost town explorers, the poets of the plains. Let's begin with Laramie poet Lori Howe, who has a new book out called Voices at Twilight. It's a book of poems, photographs, and historic essays about the ghost towns of Wyoming's Southern Corridor. She joined Wyoming Public Radio's Bob Beck to talk about the book and to read some excerpts.
Bosler, Wyoming, where the cold arm of the snowy mountain thins to wrist and river, Bosler's people changed into antelope. Locusts and rain ate the paint from her walls. Now, vacant stores sell beds for ghosts, and the school instructs winter in the habits of crows. Foundations flake away like yellowed pearls of glue in photo albums, memories of a youth in which everything is still to come, the roads ahead wide open and going everywhere, bathed in a technicolor shine, almost certain to endure. In Spanish, the word naufragio means shipwreck, and sobreviviente, survivor. Here on the edge of the sage, TV antennas and broken light bulbs broadcast stories of some hardy few who clung on longer to Bosler than most. They wait for the golden eyes and lonesome smoke-filled voices of trains, their cars stacked like children's blocks in red, green, and blue, the only riot of sound and color left here on the border, dividing nothings. Now the wide, empty pavement and glassless windows stare back, mute chronicles of a long-forgotten rapture, not a single willing tongue left to sing of a prosperous heaven or its soft and verdant grace.
That is poet Lori Howe, who's joining us in the studio, who has a new book of poetry out, Voices at Twilight. Lori, nice to have you back on our show. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
So tell me a little bit about this book. What's its name?
This is a book of poems, photographs, and historical essays about the ghost towns along Wyoming's Southern Corridor. And I was working on a completely different project. And then one day, I was part of a group that went out to see Old Carbon, Wyoming, one of the ghost towns in this book. And I was so moved by that experience that I changed my MFA thesis completely and embarked on a tour of Wyoming's ghost towns and writing and photographing and researching them.
Want to give us another one?
Sure, thanks. Old Carbon, Wyoming. Part 1, 1869, The Seamstress. Family lost to ship death, one by one, I watched faceless sailors heave my blood over the rail into the foam. The night I turned 14, I cut my curtain of hair with a knife, washed my dead brother in rainwater, and took his clothes. I worked the railroad as a boy, helper to the Gandies until my curves gave me away. Now this place, Carbon, a flat stretch of baked earth, the stink of coal in every stitch, every bolt of cloth, every piece of laundry flinging darkly out from taut wire. Nothing here was meant to last. This town is a faint scratch in the desert, a mercantile with its last seamstress in the graveyard, dead of childbirth and her needles lying idle, a place so desperate that water sound is a train whistle half a day off. Water scent is a fresh wooden barrel pouring out the cool smell of damp forest into the hot mouth of hell. I cannot sleep in this darkness. I shouldn't be down in the mine with the women and children, where I can't hear the raiding party, whether they've come or gone. I've faced down worse men, to put it plain. I'm good with a rifle, and true.
That's Lori Howe reading from Voices at Twilight, which came out earlier this summer. Don Sr. Trask is a poet and illustrator who lives in Encampment, Wyoming. Don grew up in the cabin her father built outside of nearby Saratoga. She shared her childhood with her family, the surrounding wildlife, and the friends she found on the Indian reservations where her father was a teacher. Don grew up drawing and painting, and she later worked as an artist in schools for rural communities in Wyoming and South Dakota. Here she reflects on the role nature plays in her art.
When I was 3, my brother took me on my first real horseback ride on Revern, and we went galloping through the sagebrush and racing jackrabbits and watching eagles soaring above us, and I was just hooked from that moment on, and grew up with all my ranch girlfriends, Tammy Vivi and Corrine and Julie Young, and we were constantly out with our horses, exploring the mountains and seeing the wildflowers and having all kinds of adventures and pretending all kinds of adventures. We'd pretend to be Indian girls, or we'd pretend to be outlaws, or in fact, when I was 4, that was my main goal in life, was to be a bandit. Yeah. In fact, I stole my neighbor girl's rocking horse, I'm afraid to say. So I was a horse thief when I was when I was 4. But anyway, growing up, even when we didn't have access to our horses at school, every recess, that's what we were. We were horses, and we played horses all the time. And so horses were just in our minds constantly. It's all we ever thought about. Horses and other wild animals. We kind of worry that the younger kids are so involved with technology that they won't appreciate the beauties of the world that we grew up with. You know, I grew up without electricity, without plumbing or running water, or except in the creek, of course, or television. And so I was able to enjoy all the details and all the drama of the actual world around me. And sometimes in my artist in schools, I would find similar kids. And I remember there was particularly one girl who was talking to me about how her friends didn't understand her because she liked to spend her time up on a cliff overlooking the river, watching the deer go by. And when I got home from that residency, this poem came into my head. And at first I didn't understand what the poem was about. And then I realized it was a response to that girl. And this is what I had to say to her. This is a poem I wrote called Future to a Young Wyoming Poet. Trust to the sky, your wide, unpeopled years, like a wild lake unrippled all the long dawn. Those clouds, towering the first inch into infinity, will be your heroes, your companions, when you sit in the dirt digging wild onions, gathering sour mountain sorrel in the silence of this life. Someday, the sky will give you back your thoughts, filled with wind and light.
When David Romvet moved to Wyoming, he says his profession as a poet immediately made him suspect. His wife, Margot Brown, an artist and Wyoming native, talks with David about how he gradually earned the respect of her ranching relatives.
So when our daughter was a tiny baby, I would walk her up and down the street quite often. I'd carry her in a little backpack or bicycle her in a trailer. And it was winter one day, I remember, about 24 below, and we were doing errands on Main Street, and at almost every shop a woman would come out and she'd say, "You get that baby in out of the cold. That is too cold for that baby. You don't be walking around at 24 below with a baby in a backpack." And I just remember so all these stories about the baby in town, because other people in the summer, when I'd be walking with her in the trailer, on the bike, or walking with a carriage or in the backpack, people would come up all the time and they knew that we were in the Basque community, in a Basque family. And they would say, "Oh, she's so beautiful. And she just looks so Basque." Well, of course, there's no Basque blood in her. I mean, she's culturally growing up in a Basque American community, but there's no genetics of Basque because Simon, her grandfather, was Margot's stepfather. But I love that people would just say that. She's so Basque.
Well, and I remember when the ladies all yelled at you about it being so cold, you were so mad at them because you knew how to take care of your baby. But I remember thinking, well, it's kind of nice to live in a community where everybody watches out for everyone. And the first time Caitlin wanted to walk to my mom's house by herself. It's just two blocks. She was 5 years old, and she really wanted to walk by herself. And so I said she could, and I kind of spied on her until she was out of sight. My mother was spying on her from the other end. It's just two blocks, you know. And she said all these people came out of their houses and asked her if she was okay. She said, "I know I'm not supposed to talk to strangers, but people kept coming out and saying, 'Are you okay?'"
I mentioned just briefly that my own childhood was not a happy one, with a father who was not really equipped to be a very good father. And Margaret is told how funny it is that her stepfather, Simon, was in some ways maybe a little difficult guy too for Margaret and her brother, Mike. But when I came along as a young adult moving here, he was a fantastic father. He took me under his wing and he took me kind of into ranching. Now, it's also important to know that I came here as a poet, not exactly a sort of central economic function in Wyoming life. Yes.
And not only a poet, but a vegetarian poet.
Oh, yes, a vegetarian poet.
That's even worse.
Oh, and there was another. There was worse than that. There was the vegetarian communist poet.
Oh, yeah.
Coming to Wyoming. And so I was held, there was a little suspicion about my presence in the life of this young woman, Margot Brown. But Simon took me kind of into working with him. And so I became, because I was younger and could spend a lot more time scrambling and climbing, did windmill maintenance. When I first came here, the 4 Mile Ranch had 19 working windmills to bring water to the surface for stock, right? Watering cows or sheep. Sheep was just kind of at the tail end when I came here, and it was more cattle. But I simply spent a lot of time up on windmill towers, 30 to 50 feet in the air, with a belt like a bosun's kind of chair in sailing, hanging off the back of this windmill, trying to uncrank things with one hand and push on something else, and covered with grease. And the platforms were always greasy from a lot of windmills throw oil. They're not really built with great gaskets in some of the joint parts, so oil gets thrown and it's a mess. Worked with him a lot. And he came to feel really strongly, I think, that, he might be a poet and a communist and a vegetarian, but he can work.
He really respected you.
I found that to be a really big part of life here. I remember feeling as though it was kind of the old joke about, well, you may be a poet, but if you can fix fence, you're okay. It's fine. And people didn't care. And that seems to me a central part of one of the most positive aspects of Wyoming life, which is a sense of live and let live that I understand to be really important in our history. And if we want to get along in small communities where you know everyone and you may not necessarily agree with your neighbor on social or political issues.
David Romvet served as Poet Laureate of Wyoming from 2003 to 2011. He now teaches in the MFA in Creative Writing program at the University of Wyoming. Here are three poems about his daughter.
Sunday morning early. My daughter and I paddle red kayaks across the lake. Pulling hard, we slip through the water. Far from either shore, my daughter is a young woman, and suddenly everything is a metaphor for how short a time we are granted. The red boats on the blue-black water, the russet and gold of late summer's grasses, the empty sky. We stop and listen to the stillness. I say,
It's Sunday, and here we are in the Church of the Out of Doors. Then wish I'd kept quiet. That's the trick in life, learning to leave well enough alone. Our boats drift to where the churring of grasshoppers reaches us from the rocky hills, a clap of thunder. I want to say something truer than I love you. I want my daughter to know that through her, I live a life that was closed to me. I paddle up, lean out, and touch her hand. I start to speak, then stop. Surprise breakfast. One winter morning, I get up early to clean the ash from the grate and find my daughter, 8, in the kitchen, thumping around pretending she has a peg leg, while also breaking eggs into a bowl, separating yolks and white, mixing oil and milk. Her hands are smooth, not from lack of labor, but youth. She's making pancakes for me, a surprise I have accidentally ruined. "You never get up early," she says, measuring the baking powder, beating the egg whites. It's true. When I wake, I roll to the side and pull the covers over my head. "It was too cold to sleep," I say. "I thought I'd get the kitchen warm." Aside from the scraping of the small flat shovel on the iron grate and the wooden spoon turning in the bowl, the room is quiet. I lift the gray ash and lay it carefully into a bucket to take outside. "How'd you lose your leg?" I ask. "At sea. I fell overboard in a storm and a shark attacked me, but I'm fine." She spins, a little batter flying from the spoon. I can hear the popping of the oil in the pan. "Are you ready?" she asks, thumping to the stove. Fork in hand, I sit down, hoping that, yes, I am ready, or nearly so, or one day will be. Late winter ski trip. Rubbing my hands to keep warm, I sit in the trees and watch the snow hut melt, the rain falling like girders from the tops of buildings. I stare into the mist, trying to see down the mountain to the houses below, smoke rising from the chimneys. My daughter and I eat breakfast, raisins and nuts in tin cups of yogurt. She paces now and again, looking up at the dark clouds. Under her coat, her skin is smooth with only buds where there will be breasts. The rain turns to hail, teeth cracked from the mouth of the sky. Finished eating and anxious to set off, we nearly pour the sticky red clister wax onto our skis. Now the hail softens, becoming snow, the disembodied wings of angels falling. There's no point in waiting any longer, no point in staying forever in the trees.
Now, being named a poet laureate is one of the greatest public honors a poet can receive. The tradition has roots in governments and royal households across the globe. It's often an office for life. In Wyoming, a state poet laureate holds the position for about 4 years before relinquishing the post to another poet. Last year, Governor Matt Mead named writer and small business owner Rose Hill of Sheridan as Wyoming's 7th poet laureate. Here she is reading her poem, Song of Wyoming, at the governor's ceremony last summer.
Wyoming winds from sagebrush and prickly pear murmur through pine and aspen to the trill of meadowlark, robins, sage-grouse, pheasant, raucous ravens, elk bugle and coyotes bay, grizzly bass notes. The mountains sing Casper, bighorns, tetons, while snowmelt trickles, tumbles down Wind River, Tongue, Powder, North Platte, Yellowstone, to the echo of wagon trains on the Oregon Trail, Bozeman, Santa Fe. Shoshone, Arapaho camps hum with their counterpoint shouts and laughter. Mountain Men Rendezvous, Pony Express beats, Gary Owen, rhythm marches. Varied voices, Irish Gandhi dancers, Basque sheepmen, Esponda, Echeverry, cattlemen, Goodnight, Kendrick, Patrick, Spear. Cowboys, halloo! Horses buck and stomp, Polish, Chinese miners, the crescendo of bulldozers and drag lines. Visionary men and women, Warren, Moonlight, Ross, Whistler, Henry Coffeen, John Patton, Rosie Berger, Geringer, Friedenthal, Sullivan, Mead. Hear the throb of cities where country, rock and roll, Bach rises from strings, drums, where the tap of sculptor's hammer, the swish of artist's brush, the thud and thump of weaver's loom, schoolroom's hushed recitation, all add their depth to Wyoming's symphony.
And that's it for this edition of The Modern West. Catch our next episode on the third Tuesday of the month. If you like what you hear, we'd appreciate a positive rating. In the meantime, you can find lots more stories about the Modern West at our website, wyomingpublicmedia.org. John Wiebe produced this podcast. Anna Rader is our web editor. The theme music is by Jeff Troxell. And I'm Micah Schweitzer. The Modern West is a production of Wyoming Public Media.